them north of here in South Georgia. 88 degrees in Jacksonville. Talk radio WBOB.
The following program is sponsored. The opinions and statements made by the hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect the views of WBOB or its parent company, the Chesapeake Portsmouth Broadcasting Corporation.
You're in the right place at the right time. Coming to you live today from Washington, D.C., the nation's capital, in our studio at Corey Lewandowski Galactic Headquarters. And he's with us right now, Corey Lewandowski, the former campaign manager for the Donald Trump for President campaign. He's the guy that turned on the lights, opened the doors, and he engineered Trump's improbable, historic victory. Great friend of mine. I've been with him. With that since the first day, and he has me this beautiful studio here right in his international galactic headquarters where we are today. And the other thing is I want to mention is that one of the best things that you could do is buy Corey's book, Let Trump Be Trump. I just read it over again the other day because it's such a great read. I read it on the airplane going to Tampa, Florida. It's the second time. It's about a four-hour sit-down read, but it's really fabulous. All you have to do is go to Amazon or where else? Anywhere else?
Barnes & Noble, and any bookstore should carry it. You know, John, Dave Bossi and I wrote this book, and it became a New York Times best-selling author because people want to go back and remember how special the campaign was, what Donald Trump achieved in this election. When you pick up the book, the first three words of the first paragraph of the first page of the book talk about the media bias and how they say he had no chance of winning this election. And not only did he win 270 electoral votes, he won 306 electoral votes when they originally said he had the chance of becoming the biggest loser in modern political history. And this book is a recap of all of the great things that took place in that campaign. Peel back the curtain, you understand what it's like to fly on Trump Force One. You understand what the personalities of the campaign are like. And I tell the truth because that's what I do, John, because I can't be fired. It's already happened. And so it's a little liberating, and I think your listeners would really like it.
Let Trump Be Trump. You have to buy it. I read it for the second time the other day. Fabulous piece of work. Don't miss that. It's always great having you here, Corey, even though I'm at your studio here. At our studio all the time. We don't always get to talk to each other. You were at Trump's rally last night in Nashville. We played an hour of that at the 6 a.m. hour. Tell me how that went. Tell me about the enthusiasm there.
You know, John, I've had a privilege, as you know, to attend hundreds of rallies with then-candidate Trump and now a number with President Trump. And it never ceases to amaze me how many people turn out to support this president, to support his agenda, to drive hours on end to get through the security, to listen to a man tell the truth about what he wants to achieve for America. That place was so exciting last night. It's so invigorating. You know, you have to remember the president gets up there with almost no notes, and he talks for an hour and 15 minutes, and the crowd is just so fired up, so enthused, so happy. And it really brings you back to say, boy, this is the greatest country in the world, that you've got a person who's fighting every day for our values, and the American people, whether we've been in Michigan together or in Tennessee last night or wherever it is, they turn out in record numbers. There were 10,000 people in that place last night in a torrential downpour in Nashville, Tennessee, to support this president, to support his agenda, and I was very honored to have been being in the arena with him.
That rally was done. One of the reasons you went there was for Marsha Blackburn, congressman from Tennessee, that's running for U.S. Senate against Governor Phil Bredesen, also former mayor of Nashville. That race looking for Marsha a little better now than it did a couple weeks ago, right?
Well, that's right. And, you know, I think in general, if you just look back at where we were in January, John, when I was on with you talking about the generic ballot and where Republicans were to where we are today, some 6 months later, everything is moving in the right direction. And this president and his party is poised for a big upset come November of breaking the historical trend of losing 40, 50, or 60 seats in the midterms in the House. And you will see candidates like Marsha Blackburn with the support of the president holding seats against what is really the Democrats' absolute best recruit in the country, a former two-term governor in Tennessee, someone who was well-respected as the governor, but now is deciding to try and make that race about Donald Trump. And if that's the race that they want to have in Tennessee, I'll take Marsha's team every single time.
The Republican generic polling numbers, CNN had the Republicans down just 3 months ago or 2 months ago by 16. Now they're ahead. That is almost a 20-point swing in 2.5 months. Why?
Well, John, there's so many reasons. Look, number one, you could look at the economy and you look at home ownership values and you look at the fact that the housing market is on fire. You look at unemployment rates at historic lows, literally 3.9% national unemployment, historic lows for African Americans, historic lows for Hispanics. You know, John, I literally just walked down the street here in Washington, D.C., and I'm a Dunkin' Donuts guy, so I grabbed a cup of coffee, and there's a guy standing next to me in line. He's wearing a hard hat.
And you got me one, too.
And I got you one, too.
Thank you.
And there's a guy standing next to me in line with a hat on, and he's clearly a construction worker, and he's got his outfit on. He's got steel-toe boots on. He says, hey, how you doing today? And I had a suit on. I said, hey, I'm doing great. How you doing? He said, you know what? My business – he doesn't know who I am. He said, my business is better than ever. He lives in Pennsylvania. He drives an hour and a half to D.C. in the mornings every day to pour construction, to pour concrete here. And then he drives 2.5 hours home every day. And he said, for the first time in 20 years of running my business, we can be selective of the jobs we have because what Donald Trump is doing to the economy, that's not hyperbole. That's a real man who's working literally a block away pouring concrete. His business is better. That's why the generic ballot is better, because more people have more opportunities. And he said to me, he said, anybody who doesn't have a job today, by and large, is because they don't want to work. These aren't my words. This is a guy who's working construction, getting up at 3:30 every morning to drive to Washington, to pour concrete, to drive back to Pennsylvania. And he's on the road 4.5 to 5 hours a day to go to work every day. You know, this is what has built America, the greatness of our country, because Donald Trump has cut regulations to give small businesses more opportunity to reinvest their money. And then you look at the international side of things, which really hasn't driven the domestic agenda when it comes to voting. But you look at Donald Trump moving the embassy. When they told him in Israel, when they told him it's going to be $1 billion, he literally laughed in their face and said, $1 billion, you're kidding me, fellas. Let's do it. And he did it for $450,000. Mm-hmm. And he did it in, you know, 90 days after they found the parcel of land, not 30 years. When you look at what he's been able to do, bringing Americans home, fighting for Americans, whether they have been prisoners in Venezuela, North Korea, Egypt, so many of these Americans have been stuck overseas in jails, and this president is bringing them home. And when they come home, he treats them like the American heroes they are, and he goes to Joint Base Andrews, and he meets them. That is why the generic ballot is better, because people see a president who is fighting for them every single day.
That is the key right there, the fact that this president is fighting for their economic opportunity, their jobs. You know, you talk about the number of raises. Wages have been up for the first time in four decades on a consistent basis, 2.5%. Also, Corey, 5 million people have received a company check in a form of extra money, a bonus. 5 million people. That's a lot of people getting a bonus from their company.
John, it's unbelievable. And I know Nancy Pelosi thinks it's crumbs when you get $1,000. And, you know, I've had the privilege of traveling with the vice president. He says, you know what $1,000 in the Pence household is? It's called Christmas. And that's what it is. It is a significant difference in people's lives. I know it isn't to Nancy Pelosi, who's from, you know, San Francisco, and her husband is exceptionally wealthy, and she doesn't even think about $1,000.
Right.
But where I grew up in Lowell, Massachusetts, I never thought I would see $1,000, let alone have companies giving those bonuses back to people, reinvesting in their employees. increasing their wages for the first time in, you know, years. And so this is what is stimulating the economy. We're at 3.9% unemployment. The economy continues to expand. You couple all that with the fact that this president is bringing manufacturing jobs back to the United States and says, we're not going to produce cars in Mexico anymore. We're going to produce them here in the United States.
Right.
We're not going to allow Germany to bring their cars in. They're going to produce them here. And by the way, the other thing that this president did, which he doesn't get enough credit for, fully funding our military for the first time in a decade, because what the Obama administration did to our military by gutting it, it has a long-term implication. And this president, in the last two budgets, fully funded the military, and for the first time in a decade, our men and women who serve our country got a pay raise, and they deserve every dime of it.
No question about it. We're with Corey Lewandowski, former campaign manager for the Donald Trump for President campaign. We're at our studio in Washington, D.C., at Corey Lewandowski Galactic Headquarters. Currently, Corey is the chief strategist for the Great America Committee. That is the political action committee of the vice president. That is a hard money, not soft money pact. They raise money in order to give it directly to candidates that are going to support the president's America First agenda. That's the Great America Committee. Also, want to buy Corey's book. It is a great read. Let Trump Be Trump. Let Trump Be Trump. You can get that on Amazon. I've got two copies. And if you bring one to my studio, I'll bring it up here and I'll get Corey to sign it. I want to talk about North Korea. On again, off again. What do you see happening, Corey?
Well, you know, John, this is a very delicate issue. But what this president has been able to do in the last 4 or 5 months is to bring North Korea to the table for the first potential conversation between these two world leaders, between Kim Jong-un and the president of the United States. Look, the number one issue that this president has said, we need to denuclearize the Korean Peninsula. And that is for world peace. That is something that this president is absolutely committed to. I can tell you that he is not the only world leader who wants to see this happen. You know, Japan wants to see it happen. And he is putting together a team that is willing to negotiate. But this president is also willing to walk away. If North Korea is not going to come to the table in good faith and negotiate in good faith, this president can walk away. And if he walks away, that means we keep in place the sanctions that are putting a stranglehold on North Korea, that are causing economic devastation to that country, that needs to absolutely have trading with China and with other countries around the world so that they can sustain their viability. But this president, with the maximum harm campaign that they have put in place, has brought Kim Jong-un to the table. And you saw this, your listeners have seen this. When the president decided to walk away, the very next day, Kim Jong-un said, no, we'll go anywhere, anytime, we want to meet with you. This president is a great negotiator, the greatest we've ever had. He will get this done, but we will only do it if it is the right thing for the United States.
Okay, so they're still talking about a potential Singapore summit on June 12th. That's only 12 days away. Do you think that's even a realistic possibility now?
Look, it's possible. The United States has a team over in Singapore right now trying to negotiate some of the things. We saw yesterday the media is reporting that Secretary Pompeo, the Secretary of State, is meeting with a former very high-ranking member of the North Korean government in New York. I think that meeting is either scheduled for tonight or tomorrow. So there are continuing to be steps in the right direction. But the mainstream media will never give this president the credit he deserves.
Right.
30 years we have had a failed policy towards North Korea. 30 years, dating back to the Clinton administration, we sent boatloads, literally pallets full of cash, and said, denuclearize. Don't promulgate a nuclear arsenal. And they did it anyways. They laughed in our face. In the last 8 years of the previous administration, they stuck their thumb in our eye and said, we don't care what you're going to do. We'll draw a line in the sand. We'll walk over it. Nothing you can do. Kim Jong-un has to understand the resolve of this president. This is a man who says what he means and means what he says. And when he does that, they understand that this is not the same leadership that has led our country to the historic disasters which have been the U.S.-North Korea relationships for the last 30 years. And I think Donald Trump is going to get this summit done. And when he does, it will be a value and a benefit to the entire world community.
And it could happen as soon as the planned one on June 12th, or it could happen over the summer, right? I mean, there's no hard deadline with this, but I think you're right. I think it is going to happen. We're with Corey Lewandowski. He's the former campaign manager of the Trump for President campaign. He was the guy behind the entire campaign that made it happen. He is now the chief strategist for the Great America Committee, which is Vice President Pence's political action committee, which is designed to raise money in order to support candidates in the midterms who support the president's America First agenda. So he's dialed in on that. Corey, I want to get to the China tariffs, a little bit of debate going on in the White House. As you know, I've been critical of Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin, and I call him TV Larry Kudlow, for kind of backing off the tariffs on China and getting the president to maybe do some deal with them that we know they're not going to ever follow through on. I think, you know, when the president ran, his instincts on China were sound. We're getting screwed. We're getting hammered. Our cash is going to them. They lock everything out. We have to go with a system of tariffs. They've identified 105 industries where the Chinese are taking advantage of us through our trade representative. How do you think this is going to play out? And what is the influence of the people in the West Wing that don't buy into the president's policies?
You know, John, as you know, the president has changed some of his members of his team relatively recently, with the addition of Larry Kudlow and John Bolton, two contemporaries of the president's who he knew what I call pre-November of 2016, had a real relationship with. The importance of that is, even if a guy like Larry Kudlow fundamentally disagrees with the notion of tariffs, he understands one thing. There is only one man who is the president of the United States, and he is the man who is elected to put the policies forward. And so if Larry disagrees with the notion of tariffs on China because he's more of a free trader, he can have that conversation with the president, but at the end of the day, he's going to implement what the president and the president's agenda is, and that's a very important thing. And where we are on China is this: $500 billion a deficit. I mean, it's an astronomical number, and the president has been
annually.
Very clear.
Annually.
And here's what the president has said. If we bring a car in from China, they pay a 2.5% tariff. If we send a car to China, we pay a 25% tariff. That's not free trade, and that's not fair trade, and we're going to even this out, and it's very simple. We are the largest economy in the world, and if China wants to continue to do business with us, then it has to be fair for both sides, and that's what this president wants to negotiate. And anybody who doesn't understand that doesn't understand what America First means. Now, look, we're a global powerhouse. We are the greatest country in the world. We are the world's greatest superpower ever. But that being said, we have to make sure we're taking care of our people. And that means free trade, fair trade on behalf of the United States, not doing multilateral deals where the U.S. is on the short end of every stick. And that's why this president's talked about bilateral deals, so between one country and another country, so we can negotiate directly. And you look at what China has done to some of our industries. And this president has acted already with the 301 and the 232 components, because what we know China is doing is they're saying, if you want access to the Chinese market, you have to give us your intellectual property, or you have to transfer the technology to us, or we will take your technology, you will manufacture in the U.S., and then, or they'll just plain straight out steal it is the difference. Mm-hmm. And you look at the industries that have been affected between steel and aluminum, and how about a couple nobody thinks about? How about cabinet manufacturing, because it's cheaper to do it over there, so our guys are getting hammered? How about stuff like AstroTurf? How about whatever it is you think that we used to produce here in the United States The Chinese do it at a fraction of the cost. They ship it over here. We don't charge them anything. And then guess what? That country's growing like gangbusters because they got a billion people over there, and we can't even take care of our own people. And this president said, we're going to put an end to that. And look, are there discussions in the White House about what the best policy is? You bet there are. And Peter Navarro and Bob Lighthizer and Wilbur Ross at Commerce all have conversations with Steven Mnuchin and Larry Kudlow and a team. Of course they do. And that is what the give and take of a strong team of A players have the chance to do. But at the end of the day, it is the president and will be the president who is deciding what our policy is to China. And that policy is going to be America first.
Well, it has to be. We elected him on that. Corey Lewandowski with us. I've got a minute and a half. I got to get to these leaks, which is really turning out to be a drag on this administration. They're all internal. Now, we had the one that I blasted a couple weeks ago on Kellyanne Sadler that was in a meeting that I was just aghast that somebody would leak that 5 minutes after the meeting. Then there was a subsequent meeting in the White House, in the Oval Office, where the meeting about the meeting got leaked to the press, and there were only a handful of people in it. So even the meeting about the meeting got leaked. This is when the president told Sadler, you're not going to get fired. You can, you know, get that off your plate. You're doing a fabulous job. And I want to know who the leaker is. Nobody came forward, and that got leaked. What the hell is going on in there?
You know, John, I'll tell you, it's really disappointing because the high-stress work environment of the White House, of which I have never worked, but I can only envision because so many of my friends have worked there, should be one where you can have candid and private conversations with your colleagues and not think that they're going to be leaked. And look, my concern is I don't know who the leakers are, but I have the opportunity and it's an amazing honor and privilege to speak to the president both on the telephone and in person on a fairly regular basis. I was with him last night. And I'm very cautious of what I say with other people around because I don't know who is leaking things. And you could take almost anything out of context if you weren't giving the appropriate way that the conversation was taking place. And I'm not here to either agree or disagree with what Kelly Sadler had said. But what I am here to say is if you can't respect your colleagues enough that a private conversation in a small closed-door meeting can't be kept in the confines of that, then you don't deserve the privilege of working in the White House or for the federal government for this president. And you can take your ball and you can go home, right? This isn't communist China. They don't tell you where you have to work for a living. You can go and do something else. You can go to McDonald's. You can go to Walmart. You can go drive a truck. It doesn't matter. This is the greatest country in the world. And because there are so many jobs available right now, we'll find you something else to do. But this notion that you're leaking on your colleagues for the betterment of your own self-edification, you're doing this as a source so that you can be propped up later on. And I think it's disgusting. I think it's terrible. And what I hope we will see is a continued change in that White House to continue to bring people in who support the president's agenda and find out who isn't on the president's agenda and invite them to do something else.
You got 25 seconds. How do you fix it?
Look, again, I think the only thing you can do is there's a couple inflection points which I think will happen. I think immediately following the midterm elections, it is a historical time where there is staff turnover, and that's a very common thing. And I think you look at that team coming in after the midterms, if that is when a change is to be made, and you go back to the campaign, and you go back to the people who have been loyal, and you start bringing them back into the campaign, into the White House and the administration, so that you are prepared for the 2020 cycle.
All right, we're out of time. I want to thank Corey Lewandowski for being with us. He's the chief strategist of the Great America Committee. That is the political action committee, hard money of Vice President Mike Pence. Buy Let Trump Be Trump. Great book, great read, Amazon by Corey Lewandowski and Dave Bossi. Do it. Let Trump Be Trump. Hey, Corey, thank you. Always good.
Thank you, John, and I look forward to being back on with you soon.
Ponder this. Have you ever slowed down while driving after you notice radar up ahead? Have you ever changed what you were doing when your boss is heading your way? Have you ever turned off your computer game or switched computer screens when your teacher or manager is walking by? Let's be honest. We behave differently when others in authority are watching. We always want to be seen doing what is expected of us and exhibiting behaviors that make us look our best. What's really interesting is that most of us don't realize that we are being watched all the time. Yep, that's right. God is watching us all the time. He's watching and listening to everything we think, do, and say. He's even taking notes, so to speak. If we behaved all the time knowing God is watching, we would most certainly be on our best behavior, making sure we do all that God expects of us and following all that God has commanded of us. Get to know God and His commandments.
Talk Radio, AM 600, 101.1 FM, WBOB.
With SRN News, I'm Ron DeRockstra. A wildfire threatening a village in northern New Mexico, about 3 miles west of Cimarron, has doubled in size to over 42 square miles as about 450 firefighters try to protect nearly 300 homes in the Philmont Boy Scout camp, where over a dozen outbuildings have already been destroyed. The fires forced the evacuation of the village about 138 miles northeast of Albuquerque. The cause of the blaze is under investigation. U.S. employers extended a streak of solid hiring in May, adding 223,000 jobs and pushing the unemployment to an 18-year low of 3.8%, that according to the Labor Department. At the French Open today, two-time Grand Slam winner Angelique Kerber goes through to the fourth round after beating Kiki Bertens. Serena Williams also wins, as did Rafael Nadal. This is SRN News.
So here's a great question. How much would you save if you joined MediShare for your healthcare program? The typical savings for a family is about $500 a month. You might save more. Tammy left a major company and needed a new way ahead for her family. She'd heard about the savings with MediShare, but was wondering about the network of providers.
Once we started the program, I have not had to switch one doctor for myself or for my kids. So all the doctors that we were previously with were all in MediShare.
And she says the process has been fantastic.
I got off the phone and I was like, that's what it should be like. It was a pleasurable experience. An encouraging experience at that.
MediShare might be just the thing you're looking for your family, your budget. Use the savings for other things. Why not get your questions answered? Find out how much you can save. You can call right now. 877-64-BIBLE. That's 877-64-BIBLE. 877-64-BIBLE.
Are you putting your retirement savings in a 401k, IRA, or investment account? Then I have one word of advice. Stop. Many experts warn of a stock market crash any day now. And if it's anything like the last two crashes, you could lose 50% or more of your hard-earned savings in the Wall Street casino. Can you afford to lose half of your retirement savings again? Hey, you don't have to lose a penny, because there's a better, safer way to save for retirement. And you can learn all about it in a free report. This is the report Wall Street and big banks desperately hope you never see. Why? Because this method continues to grow your money even when the market tumbles. It lets you take back control of your money and finances, and it gives you penalty-free access to your savings. Plus, it beats the pants off any 401k or IRA. These are uncertain times, so get the information you need today to guarantee your retirement security. To get this free report, go to bankonyourself.com right now. That's bankonyourself.com. bankonyourself.com.
Attention all business owners. Are you happy with your website? Is your website easily found on the internet? How about your social media? Does your company have a professional and engaging social media presence? If your answer is no, then contact Smarty Digital today for help with your website, digital marketing, or social media campaign. Call or click today for a free digital marketing audit. It will be the smartest decision you will ever make. Call Smarty Digital at 904-674-3370. That's 904-674-3370. Or click smartydigital.com.
The latest traffic and weather on WBOB, your 2018 election authority.
No active accidents right now around Metro Jacksonville. I-10, I-95, the east and west beltway looking pretty good. And the only thing to watch out for, looks like now, is some roadway debris on the west beltway, 295 northbound at 103rd Street. Severe thunderstorm watch in effect for our area till 8 o'clock. Most of the storms seem up near Fernandina and on the southeast Georgia area. Right now, 90 in Jacksonville. Plenty of sun.
Frederick's Radio Network. Joining us now, Republican Congressman, Virginia 9th District, Morgan Griffith. Congressman, great to have you with us, sir.
Good to be with you.
So,
well,
it is, sir. Your good friend and mine, Tom Garrett, resigning on Monday. Neither expected that. Neither of us saw that happening, I don't think. I mean, we talked a little bit this weekend over some of the issues. He didn't come up, but I didn't expect that. I know your friend at Tom's, you know him very well. Did you have any conversation at all with him, sir?
I have not had any conversation with Tom since he made the decision to not seek re-election. Obviously, I did not know about his issues with alcohol, but I did think a lot of the charges that were being brought up in the press were, as he said, half-truths and outright lies. And so I'm sorry he made the decision, but if that's what's best for his family, then that's what he should do. At this point, we have to move forward.
Well, it was a personal decision he made, and when you look at it on the surface, I don't think it was necessarily made by the hit piece that Politico had on him. I think that came out on Friday, which I thought was, by the way, a despicable piece. Unnamed sources, interns, who knows who. And as far as having dogs in the office, the last time I went in one of the buildings, I saw several dogs. So it's not like he's the only person that had a dog in there. So I just thought that was a hit piece that was beyond the pale. But, you know, Congressman, it's the time we live in now. I mean, political enemies now of people get taken out by these so-called media companies that basically do hit pieces without naming anybody. I mean, it could happen to anybody at any time, and you can't do anything at all about it. Kind of sad, isn't it?
It is certainly a problem on both sides of the aisle. People get these accusations that pop up out of nowhere, and or there's a little bit of truth to it, and they make it sound like it's something that's horrible. We're all human beings. We've all, you know, said or done things that we ought not to have done, and we're just trying to do the best we can across the board. And all of a sudden, somebody comes in and blows it up out of proportion, and it puts a lot of stress on members and their families. There's no question about that.
All right, let's get to politics. Let's get to the immigration bill coming up, the so-called Queen of the Hill, where it looks like we could get four separate bills. One is going to be just a clean amnesty. We know we have the Judiciary Chairman, Congressman Bob Goodlatte bill. Nobody's seen that. We understand there might be some changes to it. But Republican leadership really on this one, Congressman, between a rock and a hard place, because the last thing they want is four separate bills to vote on, and then one of them is just clean amnesty, right? I mean, that's the last thing they want, but you've got enough moderates, it seems, now to be able to get that to the floor. What do you think will happen, sir?
Well, the negotiations are underway to try to come up with a bill that's more Republican than not. There are enough moderates to probably force the issue. I, for one, don't like Queen of the Hill. I think that's bad legislating. And so your listeners understand that means that you vote on all four bills, but it's not the first one to pass. It's the one that gets the most votes of the four. Mm-hmm. So two or three of them might pass, but it's the one that gets the most votes. So if one bill gets 230 and another bill gets 229, you're stuck with the 230. I don't like that. I think it's bad policy, and I would anticipate breaking with my leadership and voting against the rule if it was a Queen of the Hill approach.
But if you've got enough moderates to combine with all of the Democrats, I think you need, what, 18 of them?
They may do that.
Right?
Yes, they
18,
may do that in spite of me being opposed to it.
Yeah, then they can pass it anyway, and it's going to get to the floor. But, I mean, the whole objective of the president's approach to immigration reform, and he has said this. He said, I'll grant a form of amnesty to the DACA children, to the Dreamers. I will grant that. And I think there's 800,000, 750,000 applicants. He said he'd go up to 2 million with the understanding there's probably another million that haven't applied out of fear of going on a list. I get that. So I think the president showed, look, I'm willing to fix the short-term problem. But he said, along with that, I want a long-term legislative reform solution to immigration that includes border security, building the wall, getting rid of chain migration, going to an economic-based system, getting rid of the visa lottery, things of that nature, so we can fix the problem so this doesn't keep happening. Why isn't that bill going to the floor?
Well,
the Goodlatte bill.
Yeah, there are enough moderates who don't like some of the aspects of the Goodlatte bill, so they are opposing that. There may be some modifications made. When we left Washington last week, various parties were discussing it. Meetings were being held. And I can tell you that things looked good. Now, you know, things can look good one day and dark the next. So I can't tell you what's happening today, but when I left, the moderates were negotiating with the conservatives and trying to come up with the four pillars that the president says he will sign and that he wants. It still won't go and do everything. It won't fix everything. There's a lot of problems in our immigration system. We make it too hard for people who have skills and talents that we want to come here from wherever in the world. On the one hand, on the other hand, we've got a poor border system and a system where people are allowed to come into this country on a work visa, a student visa, or even a travel visa, and nobody ever checks up to see whether they left when they were supposed to. So there's a lot of reform that we need to do that will not be taken up this summer, unfortunately. But if we can get an end to the chain immigration system, if we can get rid of the lottery, if we can put some real significant money in advance on securing our southern border, then those are valuable steps. And everybody wants to see us do something with the DACA children that makes sense, because, you know, I'm sure there are some who came here full well knowing that they were breaking the law, a few who were maybe 16, 17 at the time. But the vast majority of them came as small children. They had no idea. They were just with their parents.
And I mean, I think that's
taken care of, but we've got to make sure we fix the system and don't just, you know, take care of that and then never do anything on the southern border or on the rest of these problems.
I think everyone would admit that the immigration system as we have today is not working. So we've got to reform it. Hopefully moderates and conservatives and immigration, the hawks like me, maybe they can get a compromise that everybody can live with. I'm all about compromising because something is better than what we have now. And I understand you're going to have to be some give and take. And I think the president led with that. He said, you know, I campaigned on no amnesty for dreamers, but I'm willing to give up amnesty to 2 million with a pathway to citizenship if we can solve the problem on a long-term basis. And that got soundly rejected by Chuck, Nancy, and the others. One thing about the Democrats, Congressman, you have to admit, they stick together. I mean, it's unbelievable. The Republicans fracture all the time. The Democrats in both chambers, how do they manage to stick together to such an extent? How do they manage that?
You know, it's interesting because I think it's actually good that we don't stick together. I say that, you know, it's hard to get things done. But the Democrats put their political party above their philosophy and what they think is right for the country. And so they always come back to following in on what the party wants to do, with a few rare exceptions. Republicans don't do that. We believe, many of us, both on the right and the left in our party, both the moderates and the conservatives in our party, you know, if we strongly believe in something, we're going to go out there and fight for it, and as opposed to just kowtowing to our leaders. They kowtow to Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer. We just don't do that. Boehner never had that. Ryan doesn't have that. The speakers that were there before that didn't really have that. And I think in the long run, it's healthier to have this debate of ideas. Now, we're trying to come together by working out a compromise within the Republican conference. And Leader McCarthy and Speaker Ryan are working very hard to try to make that happen. I know Mark Meadows and Jim Jordan of the Freedom Caucus are working in that direction without sacrificing the principles that we hold on these issues. And I believe that the moderates are likewise trying to negotiate in good faith to get a Republican compromise worked out, and then we can all come together without sacrificing, you know, all of our principles to, you know, to kowtow or bow down to one leader on one side or the other.
Congressman, the president sent up a $15 billion rescission package, a clawback, saying, you know what, here, I'm looking through this budget, there's fat here, there's garbage here, there isn't this here. Let's just get this $15 billion out. A lot of the money not even being spent, sitting in accounts that are not being activated. It's not like this is coming out of school children's lunch boxes, right? This is just money sitting around. But yet, even with a majority, you don't even have the votes in Congress to get rid of $15 billion that isn't even being spent. I mean, what is the deal?
Yeah, I can't explain that. I can tell you that, you know, that some people just think it's hard to explain. I don't. Because the Democrats immediately attacked and said you're cutting money out of the child's health insurance program.
Fake news.
No, we're taking money that hasn't been spent. We're leaving a reserve that's as large as any time that we've needed a reserve for that account. And we just finished authorizing and taking care of CHIP for the next 10 years. And interestingly, many of the Democrats voted against that reauthorization because they didn't like the way we were spending for it. And what a rescission package does in this case, it takes money off the table that hasn't been spent. And the reason the Democrats are opposed to it is they want to use that as what's called a pay for later. So even though we just passed this giant omnibus, some of the Democrats want to go back in, claim, oh, well, here's some money over here that we haven't spent, so we can now spend it on something else. So we're spending more money than we've ever spent before, and they still want to spend. And unfortunately, some of the Republicans are either afraid politically that they can't explain it, or they're afraid that they want to spend it too, in some cases, some of the moderates. I don't think that's true of most people. But that's what you're facing, and that's the reason that we're having difficulty getting the vote, because this rescission package makes all kinds of sense.
Well, it does, because just if I can just explain it, and I'm going to do it in 20 seconds. This is $15 billion that the White House Budget Office, when they got the budget back, identified as money that is sitting in accounts that haven't been spent, money sitting in loan packages that haven't been loaned out. Like there's $400 million in a railroad expansion loan fund. It's been sitting there since 1986. I mean, there is no railroad expansion. That is not going to happen. It just sits there. The money just sits there in an account. And what the budget office is saying is, let's shut all this down, get this money back. It's not going to cause any difference, but let's get it back into the coffers and get it out of there. And Republicans and Democrats say no. Crazy. All right, let's get to Trey Gowdy now. I know he's retiring, Congressman, and all that, but you know, he gets on TV and he's now defending Spygate in the Trump campaign, saying that the American people would have wanted these informants in there, yet the informants went in based on a dossier, based on getting collusion on Trump. Now they're backing away, saying, well, they're not spies, they were informants, but they were after these other people, but maybe it was collusion. I mean, don't you think this has got to be investigated, what the hell went down?
Absolutely. Look, if this was not an intrusion by the American bureaucrats into a political campaign, then tell us who or how many of these folks were in the Clinton camp. Because if you're looking for Russians trying to interfere, you should have people in both camps if you think that's so important. Nobody has said one word about there being a Clinton spy, somebody who was assigned to keep an eye on their people, who, you know, maybe passed on information and set things up. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff going on. I don't know all the facts. I want to know all the facts. As an elected representative in the United States Congress, I think we're all, as the American people are, entitled to the facts. And we're not going to get the facts out of the organization that did wrong in this case. There's an appearance of impropriety. That means you need to bring somebody in who has no connection with the current folks. And when I say current folks, I'm talking about the folks who are career people at the FBI, career people at the Justice Department. We need to have somebody from the outside come in and take a look at it. And I agree that we need a special counsel probably to take a look at this, unless we can be assured that there's going to be a look by an outside individual who's only concerned about getting the facts. And I'm not sure we can get that assurance from the Justice Department at this point.
Once again, Congressman Morgan Griffith getting right to the heart of the matter. Spot on. Congressman, always appreciate you coming on. Love your candor. And thank you for your time. Really appreciate it. Thank you so much. Joining us now, former governor of Virginia, Republican, during the 9/11 attack, Jim Gilmore, with us now. Governor, great to have you, sir.
Great to be with your listeners, John. Thank you.
today, Medicaid expansion, this could be the day it goes down. The Senate Republicans are holding a press conference today. There's counter press conferences by Americans for Prosperity and others. What is your position on it, sir?
Well, first of all, I want to make it clear that I think that we ought to be trying to find solutions to people who don't have health care. Nobody wants poor people to be sick. Nobody wants people to not be able to go to the doctor. So I really think the question is, what's the best possible solution? Well, the easy solution is just the expansion of Medicaid so that we add 400, 500, 600,000 more people onto the public bill for health care. Medicaid is a health program for people of lesser means, and it means that the regular taxpayers will now take on the burden of their health care. That's really what Medicaid is. Well, there are several problems with this, and I just think that that the articles that I've written, which I've put on my website, AmericanOpportunity.org, is my experience as governor. And I guess my message to the members of the legislature and to the public is that you can go this way, and nobody wants people to be sick. But the fact is that this is going to mean up the road giant tax increases. And I just think we ought to get it on the record. So when it happens, we all understand that the people that voted for Medicaid expansion today are voting for giant tax increases in the future. Health care is unlimited in its demand. If you give it to people, instead of going a different route and trying to find people who have the opportunity to have health care through their businesses, through their jobs, through the ability to purchase inexpensive programs, then if you go away from that to a government-controlled health care system, that means that the rest of us are going to have to pay giant, giant increases in the future. I'm going to let you go. Here's the deal. When I was the governor, and I tried to put the budget together, and I put the budget together to make it balanced, there was always the just giant, giant 25%, which was Medicaid. And I was told, you can't touch it. You can't. It's inflexible. Once it's in, and that's it. And so I just think we need to understand that what's going on now is that the budget is being held hostage to a giant new government program, which is going to be forced in, and it's going to have to be paid for in the future, and it's going to be through tax increases.
Well, Governor, number one, if I may, number one, to say it's a new government program, I mean, Medicaid is not going anywhere. We've had it nationally and in Virginia forever, so this idea that it's a new government program, like we're starting a new entitlement, I mean, I just don't think that's an accurate description of it. And basically what the expansion program does is it provides a bridge for able-bodied working poor Americans to get insurance as they try to move up the economic ladder. And I've said this before, 85% of those people that are going to benefit from this in Virginia voted for Trump. So what are we supposed to do? Kick them to the curb and say, well, down the road, somebody will find a fix to this? And the argument that, well, these people, they're not going to grow their income, or they're not going to get a better job because then they'll lose their Medicaid expansion benefits. I mean, that is just a false argument. I mean, that's like saying working people want to stay downtrodden. I mean, these are people that have jobs, and then they say they're not getting paid for. Well, 90% of it is paid for the federal government. Governor, that's a law. You're going to have to go to Congress, change the law, and get the president to sign it. That's a law. They tried that. They failed it when they had a bigger majority. They're not getting that done. And then the hospital association is saying, look, we'll pick up the other 10% because we're going to save that in indigent care. So the money is accounted for. So there's two false concepts. Number one, that having Medicaid expansion or having the ability to fund to get insurance for lower income people in Virginia somehow is going to keep them from having the incentive to get out of poverty. I just don't see that. And then the second argument is, well, it isn't going to get paid for. And I just told you how it's going to get paid for. And the third argument, saying you're expanding a new program. This is a program that's been in operation since Lyndon Baines Johnson in the 60s. So I don't get any of the arguments. Help me.
Yeah. And I'll say this. I didn't say that the Medicaid is a new program. It's not a new program. It's a major part of the welfare state that's been around since Lyndon Johnson and before. It's been around a long time, so it's not a new program. But adding another 500,000 people to it is a new program, and that's going to mean a giant increase in the budgetary demand. Now, look, the General Assembly is going to do this, I believe, and that's fine. I just simply want to get it on the record today that up the road when people come in and they say, well, no, we have to have money for education. Then at that point you'll say, well, we've got money for education. And then, no, that's gone to health care. Because the demand for health care is unlimited. It may be paid for with the excuse of a small tax on somebody else today, the hospital association or something. But as time goes on, this is an unlimited expansion. It grows and grows and grows because it's a demand that is unending. It's not new. It's simply what is new is we're now going to add another 500,000 people to it. Okay, I'm not against health care for people that need health care. I'm for that. I wish we could find some other things, some other ways to approach this through the medical and through the insurance industry, but we will never try that now because it's going to be a government-controlled program paid for by the taxpayer, and experimentation will cease. And the tax increases are certainly going to come, and it's inflexible. Once you've offered it, you can't go back and change it or alter it. So that's the direction we're going in. I just wish we could find a way for the free market to get into the game here and to experiment with this as opposed to the government paying for it, because the government is the taxpayer.
Sure, but Republicans have been in control of Virginia. You know, they had a supermajority in the House. They have a majority in the Senate. They had McDonald's governor. They didn't get it done. So it's like, So you had all this time to get it done. You didn't get it done. And now you want to say you don't want it done. And so you say, well, okay, I want a market-based solution. Okay, has somebody presented that? Emmett Hanger tried to do that in, what was it, when McAuliffe got in 2013, and they shot that down and crucified the guy. So I don't see it. I mean, it's just an empty argument. It's the same right-wing pablum that you guys have been serving up, and I don't see where you're going with this. 90% of it is paid for by the federal government. That's a law. 10% of it is paid by the hospitals because the hospitals are saying, look, I'm going to get that money back because it's going to reduce indigent care. Thirdly, Mike Pence signed off on it. Must be good and tough for him. He's everybody's right-wing conservative, you know, icon. And then you got Matt Blevins in Kentucky, the Tea Party governor. He signed off on it. But yet Virginia can't seem to find their way.
Well, let's talk about it for just a second. First of all, as I hope you agree that the bill in the future is unlimited. If you just keep adding more and more people for free health care, and it is free, it's not really insurance, it's a government program. If you add that, the costs are unlimited for the taxpayer. And that's, I guess, my concern. My concern is that Obamacare has cut off the ability to experiment and to offer new products from the insurance industry because they have to compete with the government, and, of course, they can't. The government is unlimited. They can always go to the taxpayer and ask for more money, so the insurance industry can't offer alternatives that would be appropriate for individuals to buy or to have those opportunities or even to be subsidized. Instead, we're going to go down the road of Obamacare, and that's it. And you know what? I'm in favor of people having health care. Certainly I think that we ought to be trying to find some alternatives besides Medicaid, because at the end of the day, this is an inflexible program. It takes up a giant part of the budget. It means that when you want money for other things, they will come back to the public and say, we have to have money for these other things, for education, for roads, for building, for public safety. And you'll say, well, you know, you're already taxing a lot of money to pay for those things. And the quiet answer is, well, that's already gone. That's gone to health care. So now we have to add more money for those things, which we all agree we have to have. And that will mean tax increases. Well, money's fungible. And I just think the public needs to understand that as these tax increases go up, this is the day that the General Assembly decided to do it. And, John, the reason they're doing it is because of the blue wave that came in, the anti-Trump wave in the last election, which put people into the General Assembly that want to increase the government control and provision of health care. That's what's going on. So that's what they're going to do today. Fine. I mean, it's a way of delivering health care, and I'm for that. But this is going to mean that the pipe is going to have to be paid up the road. I just want to get it on the record that that's what's coming.
All right, Governor. Great debate. I'm out of time. I want to thank Governor Gilmore for coming. Got a text here from Mike Watson. I'll read when I get back. Keep it right here.
If you're relocating within or out of the Jacksonville area or in need of residential property management or planning new construction, then you need Home Finder Realty. Listing or buying a residential property or planning to build, call Home Finder Realty. And for residential property management up to 4 units, Robert McDonald has a challenge. Shop everybody else, then get the best offer from Home Finder Realty. Call 241-5501, 241-5501, or click hfrjacks.com.
The 2018 election season is underway. WBOB is your 2018 election authority. Every candidate.
And coming up next, Bob White, chairman of the Republican Liberty Caucus, who is also running for governor.
Every issue.
That's why today I'm announcing that this year will be my last one as a member of the House.
Every day. WBOB, your 2018 election authority. AM 600 WBOB Jacksonville, 101.1 FM W2.